I've had some crazy commission requests where I've even turned them down. Like this billionaire in Texas was like, I shot a lion. Could you graffiti on my lion?
What?
And I was like,
wait, what?
Like, dude. Wait, before, well, how much?
Hey guys, welcome back to Impulsive, the number one podcast in the world. Thank you guys for listening, watching, viewing, and subscribing. Got a special guest today, ladies and gentlemen. To my right is Alec Monopoly.
Wow, let's go.
He's here in the studio. You saw the pre-roll, you saw the intro. Not 30 minutes ago, he was painting, or I mean, yeah, what would you call that art? Graffitiing? Painting?
I would say painting.
Painting. No. You're painting an Impulsive logo, ex Alec Monopoly. You're my neighbor, good friend. So happy to have you on Impulsive, bro.
Thank you for having me.
Do you mind if your dog eats your bird again? Because he's dead set on it. I'm sorry, Maverick. I couldn't have stopped it first time.
And that sucks. Well, bro, good to have you on, man. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. This is your first podcast ever.
Yes,
ever.
First podcast.
Why is that? I'm actually curious.
It just never felt right. Really? I've had a lot of DMs from big people with podcasts. So we'll fly you here or there. But being your friend, I just felt like it wouldn't be right doing a podcast with someone else. I don't know. It's like cheating.
It is cheating. And no, bro, I appreciate that. And I remember before I became your friend, hearing about you. And you've always been a little enigmatic, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I think it's good that people don't fully get to dive into your brain and you kind of keep them on their toes. It's something about, like, access to people.
Yeah.
And it works really well for artists.
One of the 48 laws of power is actually scarcity and making it and keeping yourself scarce. So, like, not being around, like, showing up only when needed. And it creates an illusion of inaccessibility. And I think that was something that you did a really good job of in your, you know, first coming up years. And I think it was a part of it was blocking the face and no one knew who you were. Mm-hmm. What's the background between trying to keep that anonymity?
Well, it's kind of like
where did that come
anonymity?
From?
Anonymity.
Being anonymous. Yeah. It's like kind of a part of graffiti. Like there's so many graffiti artists that are still anonymous. Say Banksy. I don't know. There's a lot of guys, and it's basically to give you the freedom to paint on whatever you want. Illegal spots, these spots. So for many years I was anonymous because I was doing a lot of illegal graffiti.
Yeah. Everyone forgets that it's illegal. You know, like when you're doing it outside. Yeah. You actually sometimes break the law to get these murals up. And you have murals everywhere, dude. Yeah. Now that I'm your friend, I like pay attention to it more. And I see the areas you've traveled to paint these massive murals. I was with you in New York one time. You invited me 3 a.m. Does it always have to be at night? If that one was a legal one, correct?
It was a gray area on the law, but we were okay.
So do you always have to go at night? Like, were you sneaking in, breaking doors down, hopping fences and
confession?
Shit? David, she's here.
It's like we're wired. Come on, speak to us. How'd you get in and out?
Ingrid, I'm going to have someone come out and grab you right now.
Sure, perfect.
All right, thank you.
Like I told you, Alec, our podcasts are pretty light, pretty relaxed.
Yeah, I mean, it all kind of started for me in New York, and I was like going crazy with graffiti in New York. I have, you know, a very addictive personality. I love the rush of it. So I was just tagging everywhere in New York, and I kind of really overdid it. And the New York Police Department was like really out for me. They had, I think even the mayor found out about it. It was like Bloomberg at the time. And they sent out a task force to like get me basically. Yeah. And this was in the beginning of my art career. Like I had just had, I had just locked in this big collector. I'd never sold any artwork before. So he was like, we're going to fly you out to New York and I want to buy 30 pieces. So as I'm creating the works in the space in Chelsea, I'm graffitiing everywhere. And this is a space that's in the arts district of Chelsea. I papered up the windows so you couldn't see in. Mm. So I was doing graffiti everywhere. I was tagging and I'm not even going to say the places. And then the genius idea was that the paper on the wall, I should graffiti on that and turn it around. So like, it's a piece in the studio, which immediately, like a couple hours later, like four cops showed up to the studio and they were like, I could tell they were undercovers because they had like the hidden gun. They're like, is Alec Monopoly here? Like, is the artist here? And I was like cleaning up. I randomly, I had a broom and I was just like, no, I don't know. You know, I just work here. I'm just cleaning. I'm just cleaning.
You're fucking Batman.
I'm just cleaning. And then they're like, okay, we'll be back. So after that, I was like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Wow. So I bounced and I didn't even go to my first art show. It was my first gallery show and I didn't even go because the police were there waiting and then they came into the show.
Oh my God, to buy art.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're fans.
So the police came into the show and then it was like world news. It was featured in all the newspapers. And that's kind of where my career took off is because the NYPD came into my art show and was trying to arrest me.
Dude, shout out NYPD.
Yeah, thank you guys.
That's impressive.
You're a fugitive. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. You're running from you're a real criminal.
Yeah, they finally got up to me. I mean, you never get away from these guys.
But. No, that's true. That's true. Don't break the law, kids.
Yeah.
I feel like you had to say that. Like, you're president. Okay, listen, when you're on the podcast, just admit that they'll get to you.
Yeah, exactly. They got me, so it's okay.
No, but you also, I mean, you got them. You know, they spawned a career, and it's funny how some careers can like start out of controversy. I bet then, was it scary or did you realize that was about to be the beginning?
Oh my God. It was like one of the scariest moments of my life. I mean, at one point when they showed up, like, cause they came and then left. And then I was sneaking into the studio to try to finish the works for the art show.
Oh my God.
So they were monitoring the show. So there was like an undercover guy who was out front. Mm. And I met this girl randomly because I guess like the paper was only so high. But if you lived above across the street, you could see down into the paper. And I thought no one could see. So I'd be in my boxers, like with my girlfriend. Oh, like, yo, I was like, all types of weird shit was happening in there. And then finally this girl comes up to me. She was like, you know, I live across the street and I can see down into your studio. And she was like, by the way, like, if you need it, like, I see what the cops are doing. Like, I can be your lookout and call.
Oh my God.
When they come.
For one painting.
Because there was like an undercover cop always outside, but they would go and leave. So she would let me know. And then she was like, by the way, my dad is like the governor of Vermont. I'm like, what?
You're like, thanks so much. Next time I go skiing at Killington, I'll give him like, what the fuck am I going to do with that?
Hello, Vermont. Are you there?
Hey, that's wild.
So she would call me when the undercover cop would be gone. So like when I'd have like an hour window, I'd sneak in and like sign the pieces and try to finish them up. So one day I went in there to go finish them and like five cop cars surrounded the place and they were like coming to get me because I guess they knew I was there or whatever. Yeah. So I literally, there was a garbage chute that I could climb through that I climbed through to go out the back and then I bounced that way.
Oh my God. Serious. Dude, when you're sliding down a garbage chute, I think that's definitely a moment where you're like, I took a wrong turn.
That happened in the last Rock movie.
No, well, I'm not going to say where I painted, but I painted on a very special place that was a very special thing.
Statue of Liberty?
The Washington Monument. To the mayor of New York at that time. So I pissed off the big boss. So he was like, let's get this motherfucker.
Let's get this guy.
Can you give a little bit of context for people out there watching that aren't familiar with your portfolio of work? Like, who are some of the higher profile people that you've sold pieces to? And what's the price range for one of your commissioned pieces look like?
Well, I mean, so many people have my work, but the first big celebrity to buy my work was Seth Rogen. And at that moment, I had a website connected to PayPal. Like, you could just buy, like, I was just doing graffiti. I was selling prints of my work, not even canvas, for like $200. And I saw, like, in the PayPal, like, I'm not going to say his email, but like Seth Aaron. I was like, wait, is this the Seth Rogen? Yeah. He was like, yes, it is the. I'm like, come over and, you know, pick up the piece. And it was so funny because at the time I was living with this photographer, my mentor, Michel Comte. And he had like the biggest mansion in Beverly Hills. And I was just like Kato Kaelin, like living in the back making the painting. So he came to pick up the piece. And I'll never forget like Seth Rogen coming. He's like, wow, look, I should become a graffiti artist.
so it was actual Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'm like, dude, this guy laughs just like in the movies.
That's great.
And then I took him to the basement and we were there smoking weed. And then like the owner of the house, my mentor, like hated weed and shit. But I was like with Seth Rogen, he was just like, stop smoking down there. And like,
oh,
Seth's
he
like,
didn't care?
No, the owner of the house hated weed.
He did care.
But I was like, I'm with Seth. Like, I can't say no. Right, yeah, obviously. Spark it up.
You see his rolling tray that he invented?
It looks amazing. Yeah, no, he's killing it with the
Is that a product? Do we know if he's selling that?
Yeah, he does. He sells them like one of a kind. Like you can buy. They're not like mass produced. That dude smokes like a chimney. Like that he smokes so much. I asked him a few months ago on like a thing that we did together. I was like, when was the last time you weren't high? And his answer was like, I think it was like, David, what did he say? It was like a decade or something like that. Oh, when he was in Singapore. And if you get caught with weed there, they kill you. So he's like, I couldn't smoke. But he's like, I can't remember any other time besides that I wasn't high in the past like 20 years.
Wow.
I always forget that other countries like look at marijuana like a really bad drug.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, all right. So don't be too humble. Who else? Who else owns your shit? Dude?
And then the next big guy was Nobu, the owner of all the restaurants, came over. And this was all happening in this mansion house I was living in the basement of.
What year is this, by the way?
This was 2008, 2009. Okay, and then he brought my work to Robert De Niro. And then De Niro put my piece in his office in Tribeca, which was like all the biggest bosses of bosses. If you're in De Niro's office and you see Alec Monopoly portrait of him from Taxi Driver with the mohawk.
Yeah.
So,
was he like this?
No, it's the one where he just like shoots
with the mohawk.
He's got the mohawk, and he's
right?
got the blood all over his face. So it was that portrait.
Sick.
So after that, it was just like after I got De Niro, like obviously a bunch of other celebrities collected my work. But I, after De Niro, what do you give a shit? Like,
what is the second part of that question was how much is a commission piece going for these days?
Around you know like 75K to like 150 for like. You know, the right size.
Gotcha.
Depends what you want. Like, I've had some crazy commission requests where I've even turned them down. Like, this billionaire in Texas was like, I shot a lion. Could you graffiti on my lion?
What?
And I was like,
Wait, what?
Like, dude. Wait, before, well, how much?
I don't know if there's a price for it. And the hair, I don't know if it would work.
He's like, logistically, I don't understand. He wanted you to tag his taxidermied lion. And so you won't do that.
No.
What else won't you do or tag?
I think that's about, I mean, the lion was where I drew the
big
line.
Game.
Yeah.
It's never too early to start gift shopping for the holidays, especially because today you can save big on a gift they'll use every day. Raycon wireless earbuds with seamless Bluetooth pairing and a comfortable noise isolating fit. You can start listening right away and keep listening for hours. The audio quality is amazing, comparable to what you get from other premium brands, except Raycon starts at half the price. The new everyday earbuds come with three new sound profiles to make sure everything you've listening to sounds the best with just the right amount of bass. Raycon offers 8 hours of playtime and a 32-hour battery life. And there's also a built-in mic, and you can take calls on your earbuds at the press of a button. So this holiday season, get them something they can use for calls or music, for work or play, at home or on the go. Go to buyraycon.com/Logan today to unlock exclusive deals up to 20% off Raycon order. But hurry, this offer is available for a limited time only, and you don't want to miss it. That's buyraycon.com/Logan to unlock 20% off your Raycons. Back to the program.
It also seems like anything that won't like support a positive outcome. Before the episode started, we asked you to use a piece of wood as opposed to the wall, and you said it was too porous.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have come out right. So like, even if the price is right, it seems like your work is so valuable to you that you won't do it unless it's going to produce the right outcome. Is that the case?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I just have to feel comfortable with the situation. And, you know, I don't want to close any doors or hurt anybody, you know.
It is interesting watching you create and watching you make decisions as a true artist through and through. You're the only like artist painter friend of mine, and so it's cool to watch you like
on holiday. There's nothing like doing nothing. As an Expedia member, you can save up to 30% when you add a hotel to your flight, so you can go out there with great ambition to do absolutely nothing for less. Expedia, made to travel.
Not paint a piece, because I've seen you turn things down because people will have you paint something or sign something and then go and sell it and flip it for, you know, thousands of dollars. Even that impulsive sign out there, like if he painted that, someone could come in here.
Oh, we could sell it for sure.
We could sell it, bro. 100%. Like I'm probably going to take the wall that you painted.
Well, you should definitely take the cardboard garbage that I was doing the rough sketches and showing you. That's a nice piece.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to make a couple thousand off you.
It's in the garbage.
Yesterday when he was working, I saw you working on this piece. I'm not going to mention because it's between you and your work, but every time you added something to it, I in my head, I go, no, stop here. It's perfect. And then you would add one more thing and I'd be like, oh, that needed that. I didn't know that needed that. I'll go, okay, enough, done. And then you add one more. I was like, son of a bitch.
He knows what he's doing. The guy's good. You taught me how to paint too. You like teaching or you tried to?
No, not at all. I don't like teaching. But you're a very special person.
Oh,
so,
thank you.
You know.
Thank you.
Well, you are a very good teacher because I walked into your house at 3 a.m. last night with no idea how to be a DJ, and you quite literally taught me how to use Pioneer turntables last night, and it changed my life.
You didn't fuck up once.
You were actually pretty good.
He was great.
He was really good. Talk shit, no, dude. Honestly, you were doing really good.
I forgot that he wasn't a DJ. I was like, the music is just on, and
it was really good. And I also, I got to make fun of both of you, because I fucking came back to LA and I was like, Alex, teach me how to DJ, guys. I might be a DJ for a little bit. And both you fucking laughed at
me. Because
now he has the bug.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to say this. No, I've heard you DJ. And let me tell you something. I'd rather you go into BJ because that shit fucking sucks. You're like,
whoa.
But that was the first time I've ever heard him. He's just, you might be good now, but I left. I left the house because I was like, I can't hear the same song over and over. I left, took a shower, took a shit, shaved, came back. I was like, change the fucking tune, bro. Well, Logan, change it.
Logan likes going to space in Miami. You know, he likes that kind of tunes. But the reason I laughed originally is because, you know, you have multiple other avenues that are so, you know, beneficial, boxing and all of these different things. And like, I'm always looking for something that I really enjoy doing. I love music. That's I think the difference. You know what I'm saying? Like, I really do. All the songs you had on your thing, I knew. So you just started this DJ thing. When did you start that?
Well, I
I know you just started, but
yourself up and then passed the mic. You're like, I'm so fucking good at this shit, man. This is real. All those songs, I fucking knew it. Anyways, about you, bro. When'd you start this?
That's generally what you're supposed to do.
I'm trying to get off of myself and back to the guest. He said, he's like, damn, I'm lit. You just started this. When'd you start?
When did you start?
Because I'm just good within a few hours, bro. How long have you been fucking doing this? You're performing at LIV.
Yes, on Saturday.
Are you excited about that?
Yeah, I'm excited. I get very nervous. It's and honestly, I like getting nervous. It's like a new feeling. Like, obviously, in the beginning, when I was doing art shows and gallery shows, I would always be nervous about it because I'm so passionate about it.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have something new that I'm nervous about, that I'm like excited about.
Oh, that is cool.
And then after you have like this gratitude, like after you kill it and everyone's like, oh, best set. Yeah. Like, you have this rush of gratitude as well. So I'm nervous, but I know after it's going
to... Have you opened up to the world on how you do your set? Are we allowed to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of... Honestly, I put like... I have so many different playlists from different places I played.
I was talking about how you graffiti while you're doing
your set. That, yeah. I mean, it's real hard work, bro.
That's because he told me not has stop to thinking
be.
About
he, it. He really said after an hour, he's exhausted.
Yeah, like basically... Okay, so basically... My plan of this when I do it is I do a drawing like beforehand. So I kind of know, because you don't have time to think of what am I going to paint. So you have a plan of the canvas. And then so I put on the first track, you know, obviously a banger because everyone's excited. And then I start like spray painting on it. I do all the spray paint in the beginning.
It's a cheat code. It's a cheat code.
And, you know, as I go, like I don't drink before I start painting.
You're the first DJ to ever do that.
And then once the painting is going, then I start doing some shots and then I start getting in the zone. And then
I love how much you're so into your art that you're like, I got to do the sober.
Yeah. No, there's no way to be drunk and making a painting and mixing it.
Yeah,
that's good.
That, Logan?
Huh?
Can't be drunk.
I'm not interested anymore.
Towards the end of your set, you can... Honestly, I've DJed where I'm like, I don't know like if I could ever drive a car or a vehicle, but I don't know how I'm driving this technology. You know what I'm saying? Like,
It is a lot. The reason I was so bad that particular night was because of...
Oh, you're fucked up.
Because I was inebriated. Yeah, and so, yeah. And that was actually, Alec, the first time I learned, I was like, damn, I kind of would rather be the one enjoying the music, not the one curating it.
Oh, so you don't want to be a DJ?
It's not that. It's just like I'd be DJing and everyone else is having fun. And I'm like, damn, that looks like...
No, but that's one of those things. Like, there's certain people in the world that just get off on curating an experience for people at a party. Yeah. Like, bro, like, you know those dudes when you go on their boat and they're like, you know, the sandwiches are over there. This song's playing. Like, if you want to use the jet ski, it's out back. Like, there are people that literally just get off on showing people the best possible time.
Your parents, your parents are totally like that.
Here, have this.
Yeah.
Lebna? You're like, I don't even know what that is. Oh, I love it.
We figured out what Lebna was, by the way.
Lebna?
Lebna. It's
Lugna.
It's skeeter. Skeeter.
Skeeter.
Skeeter. Skeeter.
Oh, the yogurt?
It's Icelandic yogurt. It's tart.
I don't know. I don't know. Every culture adopts something and then they claim it as theirs. Like, we just add a little into it. They're like, Lebna. And it's like, all right, I guess it's ours now.
But it is cool to watch you go from artist to DJ. I saw you do that in less than a month. In less than 1 month, it went from like, damn, bro, I've been DJing for a little bit now. And are you going to lean into it? I mean, what are you going to be? A DJ artist, both?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because it's ironic because people are like, so like, are you DJing more and not painting? I'm like, dude, I'm creating a 3x4 foot canvas while I'm DJing. So the productivity is actually going up.
Yeah.
Because I'm, you know, pressured into making this huge piece very quickly within a 2 hour window of a DJ set. And I'm very blessed that I have an exclusive agreement with my gallery where the painting's already sold, which
talk about this deal with your gallery. How does this work?
So basically I did a 5-year exclusive agreement. Basically the art world is, it's like, it's politics and it's a fucking headache because before this, I was hustling. Come to dinner with my rich friend. He might buy a piece or meet this guy. And you're doing all this bullshit work of meeting people when you should be thinking about creating. Mm-hmm. So now the gallery basically controls the market. So there's only one funnel of where the paintings are coming from. So there's not two galleries. There's not a gallery, different brand gallery in London and different brand in New York that are fighting to get the sale. Mm. So they're lowering the price.
It's your exclusive broker.
So if you have one guy, he has the set price. There's nowhere else to go. Yeah, yeah. No one's fighting each other. There's no competition.
Cool.
So we control the market. Mm-hmm. So
it's in Colorado. Yeah. No,
they're everywhere. They're in New York, Aspen, London, Paris.
But Aspen
does very
well. They're the big buyer, right?
Or
the big,
no, New York is the... New York and Dubai. I'd say Dubai we do the best.
Wow. What about Chicago? Does Chicago buy or no?
I think... We don't have a gallery there, but I'm sure people from Chicago buy. Okay. But
it's interesting. Yeah, they're watching how scarce your pieces are and I guess regulating the market, which is that easier on your part? Like, you don't have to worry about where your paintings are going and being... you know, too exposed.
Yeah. I mean, financially it's amazing and the deal is great, but at the same time, it's kind of fun putting on shows and like seeing them sell like, oh, this one sold that one. They're already now with this contract, they're already all sold. The second I make the painting, it's already sold. So I don't know if it sold right away or I don't know, you know, I just make it and it's already sold. So it's kind of a dream come true. I'm not complaining about, you know, like every piece I make is already sold, but you know, I'm blessed, so I'm very grateful for that.
When we were hanging out this morning, I really, really do, and I was talking to Logan about this morning. You're a very grateful human being, and I'm so happy that you're blessed. And I'm also really happy that you're where you're at right now, because literally, bro, you're painting money. You're painting
that is hilarious.
You are painting money. People are like, you can't print money, but you fucking can paint it.
You can't print money, but you can paint it.
And just seeing the way you talk about life and everything, dude, I'm really proud of you, and I'm actually very excited.
Bro, you should suck his dick.
well, hold on. You guys DJ. I DJ. So
No. You're right. This kid brought the whole fucking squad coffee before our podcast that he's the guest on. The guest brought us coffee that we relate to.
He was already here sitting down. Hey, you guys coming? Do you guys want coffee? I can get out of here and get you guys coffee.
No, bro, it is a humbling experience being your friend. And then obviously you came down to Puerto Rico to create. Did you find that the noise everywhere else was distracting as an artist?
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy. If you look at my work before I moved to Puerto Rico and after, it's like night and day.
Really?
I swear, it's so different. Like before, I was just like, all right, like I got to finish this piece. I'm going to lunch at down in Beverly Hills. Or there's just a party, whatever. Here, I'm like, there's no one like, okay, like you'll stop by and say hi, but I'm still working.
Yeah.
And you have that time to look at the piece over and over again because there's, you know, there's nothing else to do but work on yourself, work on your career, work on your art. So yep. I think I've become a better person, you know, better artist, definitely that's, better boyfriend.
That's sick.
Definitely. Because I've been isolated. I've found myself being a better boyfriend, you know?
He's like, there's no, he's like, there's no other girls to talk to, literally. So I can't fuck it up. And if your dick won't make up its mind, we've got Blue Chew for you today. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Say it with us.
Blue Chew.
Blue Chew is making waves and bringing more confidence to the bedroom by offering chewable tablets that can help men get stronger and longer lasting erections.
That's right. About a couple, pop a couple right now.
Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form and at a fraction of the cost. Blue Chew's tablets help men achieve harder, stronger erections to combat all forms of ED. Blue Chew is an online prescription service, so that means no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversation. Get conversations and no waiting in line at the pharmacy, and it ships right to your door in a discreet package. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com, consult one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. The best part? It's all done online. So if you could benefit from extra confidence when it's time to perform, visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. Here's a special deal for our listeners. Try BlueChew free when you use our promo code Logan at checkout. Just pay $5 shipping. That's BlueChew.com. Promo code Logan to receive your first month free. We thank BlueChew and we're back to the podcast. Can we go back a little bit and talk about the culture that's involved in your pieces? You did that piece with De Niro, the taxi driver piece.
Yeah.
You do these Nicholson pieces. And I also see a lot of like fear and loathing in your stuff. Were you raised in a way that you ingested a lot of movies, a lot of music? Cause you seem to, bring a lot of that culture from your life into your work.
Yeah, totally. I mean, for me,
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Started out creating work, like my body of work that you guys know today is just from relating it to graffiti and street art. So I wasn't making canvas to sell. I was making graffiti and paintings for people in the neighborhood, people walking by to connect with, and like iconic images that people would enjoy looking at and that I enjoy looking at. You know, I'm painting Goodfellas because it's one of my favorite movies, or De Niro, or you know what I'm so it's kind of based on my graffiti and connecting with people.
Sick.
So, but I enjoy anti-heroes, like, you know,
Taxi Driver, yeah, exactly. for sure.
So I like kind of Jack Nicholson vibe and the Joker, the new Joker I did a piece of.
Did you always want to be a superstar artist? Because from what you just said, you know, painting graffiti on walls and then to where you are now, was that ever on the horizon? Or
I can say this now because it actually came true, but like every birthday since I can remember as a kid, when I blow out the candles, I would say I want to be a famous artist in museums.
No way.
Oh, shit.
So like every year I would be like, this is my wish. This Sick. Is my wish. I didn't tell anyone that. And then when I had my first museum show, and then I guess I was kind of known by people, I was just like, all right.
Now what do you
change
wish
your
for?
Wish. Yeah.
Don't I'm tell not going to say it.
Do you miss anything about being like, cause that underground like art scene, like the graffiti by night, like that's a huge clique of his own. Like there's, you know, books and magazines and podcasts dedicated to that art form of being a runner on the New York streets or LA streets. Do you miss anything about being unrecognized and being on the come up and like, and trying to bust your ass?
Yeah. I mean, I miss it. So I had so much fun. I remember I had this old 74 Bronco with no doors and back, and I would just fill it with paint cans and like buckets and shit like that. And the thing was trash. And I would just roll around LA destroying the streets. Like it had off-road tires and it didn't have doors. So I'd literally like hop up on the curb and like graffiti out of the door and like spray paint out of the door and then like drive off to the next spot.
Sick.
Like, or like use it, like come up on the curb and stand on it to get a high spot, or, you know, just not really giving a shit.
And the LA scene presented new opportunities to you.
I mean, at that point in 2008, 2009, 2010, it was like LA was the epicenter of street art and graffiti and creativity. It was just a special moment in time. Mm-hmm. And it was before, they call them buffers, where it's like the city where they come and they paint over your stuff. So they didn't really have a buffing squad so much in LA. So your pieces would stay up forever. So it was an amazing time. There's books about it and, you know.
That time period
was very special.
What's the spot now? Like, what's the most vibrant street art scene right now, would you say, if you had to call it?
Miami, for sure, 100%. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wynwood, Miami is the number one spot. It's the epicenter during Art Basel, which is coming up. And I'm lucky enough to be like, have most of the walls in Wynwood. Like, we've really taken over.
Admittedly, when I was a kid, I was always a bit afraid to pursue my dreams, my true dreams, because they were risky and they weren't a guaranteed path of success for me, but I knew I could be a good engineer. And I think a lot of kids that have that dream to become something big are kind of deterred or scared off when they're young, because society has kind of funneled people to go down a certain path. And I was even afraid to drop out of college to pursue a career that had already been working for me. Even how scary is it to tell your parents, mom, dad, I'm going to go paint on walls illegally at night? Or did they not know you were doing it? Like, how do you have the balls to pursue a career path as unknown and into the dark as that?
Well, I mean, first of all, I kind of knew my career path from the start, because in high school we had, like one of those contests where you can enter your painting and then the painting can go to an art fair, and the painting won the award and then went to the art fair and then sold for $500. Oh. So in high school I had $500 cash. Like, that's like $1 million now. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I was rolling in it. So immediately I knew, I was like, bro, this is $500 cash. Like, I'm good. Like, I'm going to work on this. But once I got into graffiti and I started getting arrested a lot, my mom, like, obviously I'd get grounded and she'd be like, well, you're going to go to jail for life. Like, crying. Like, cause it was really scary. Like, I mean, imagine that moment when I was having an art show and my mom was helping. My mom's an amazing artist. She's the one who taught me how to paint and draw.
Oh, there
she
is.
She's an amazing artist. She's like one of those like ladies that does those oil paintings that take like a year and it looks like exactly like the field with the cows and like the French countryside type shit.
Those take a year to make?
You know, like you know, not 15 minutes, huge impulsive graffiti, you know? So she taught me how to paint and draw and stuff like that. And then when I started doing graffiti and like the cops were coming, and she actually was helping me finish my paintings in that space when the cops were around it. So she knew what was going on. So she was like, dude, you're
fucked.
She's a
ride or die.
She was like, you're fucked. Like, do not, like, stop doing graffiti and all this stuff. Now it's like, it's so ironic that that's what made me the artist that I would never be here if it wasn't graffiti, you know?
So don't listen to your mom ever.
So never listen to your parents.
No.
Man, she must be so proud of you.
She is. She's very proud.
And the pops?
You know, my dad's a little out of it. My dad was in the music business, actually, which is ironic. He was the president of Columbia Records.
Oh, shit.
For a number of years. Like, he discovered like Peter Tosh and Jamaica, and he was huge in the music business.
So this media art stuff kind of runs in your family.
Do you know the craziest thing is there's a picture of my mom and my dad on their first date at Andy Warhol's house.
No way.
Yeah, and Andy Warhol's there.
Holy shit.
It's the craziest thing.
That's nuts.
That was their first date, because my dad was like trying to flex that he knew Warhol.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's a flex, man. That's a serious flex.
You collect as well? I'm assuming you have some Warhols.
I have too, yeah. But my dad had one when he divorced his first wife, who was like the richest lady in the world, Johnson & Johnson, billionaire lady. He just like walked away from it because he had no ego. But the next guy who divorced her got like the biggest set of like $500 million or something. But moral of the story, he went to Andy Warhol's house and he was super sad. And Warhol gave him a print of Mick Jagger and signed it like, I hope you feel better.
Oh, cool. Da-da-da. Cool.
But my cousin has it, so we're trying to buy it from my cousin. I don't know how my cousin
got it. It's a long story.
Yeah.
If they're watching, but it's not vaccinated. It's really weird.
My dad's a little out of it now. He's selling some possession. You know, we got to work it out.
My dad sold him a truck. I got him and then bought a motorcycle and he didn't tell me he did it. You met Greg. You met Greg.
Legend.
On an interesting night as well. That was the night where he told me the stories he never told me as a kid. where I didn't realize how truly chaotic Greg Paul was.
This story.
As a youth, Bill Church and Chuck Stoll, brother.
Chuck Stoll. I can't wait to meet these guys. We should bring them on the podcast.
We really should. We really should. Bill and Chuck, you're coming on. Bill and Chuck's excellent events. Bill and Ted, never mind.
Why Monopoly? Why the Monopoly?
Great
like,
question.
Why all of that? And I, yeah, that's it.
No, it was good.
Why all that?
I actually have a question to parlay with that one.
Nice one.
See, have you ever got in trouble with them? Have they ever been like, yo, man?
Doesn't, oh, yeah.
With Monopoly, yeah.
Okay. Which one do you want me to answer shit. First?
Go one at a time. Why Mike's, Monopoly?
Because he's been co-host for a lot longer than me.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to be honest with this answer because obviously the story relates to itself that's out there that everyone knows, but there's also a story behind that.
Ooh,
so when I was starting out, I was out on my own, whatever. I couldn't afford the art supplies, all this stuff. I was living with this very wealthy girl. She was a young girl, pretty girl. She looked like a tall, skinny model, but she had the trust fund. And she was, helping me, buying my paints and all this stuff. And in 2008, when, the stock market started to crash and Bernie Madoff was stealing money from all these big New York families, she was affected immediately. So her family was affected immediately by Bernie Madoff.
Oh, shit.
And it went from like, yo, Alex, yo, ballin', like taking all his friends to lunch and all the art supplies you want to like, not at all. So I ironically just did a drawing of Bernie Madoff as Mr. Monopoly. Because it's weird. I was watching the news of Bernie Madoff getting arrested and we were playing Monopoly, the game, because I love the game. Jesus. So I was like, dude, this is so ironic. Like, I should make Bernie Madoff's head on Mr. Monopoly with the money bag running away, representing Wall Street and what was going on. So I did that drawing first. And then I was like, I'm just going to do a Monopoly one. And then I was like, because I had already done graffiti writing. I had never incorporated my artwork and my drawing into my graffiti. So literally, I started that painting. I still have the first one. And I never finished it. Because that night, I was like, yo, fuck it. Let's go out in the streets and let's go fuck it up with this Monopoly shit. So literally, all I took was one black spray can and just went around LA and did a bunch of Monopolies and signed Alec. So literally like 2 days later, it was featured in a magazine and a newspaper, like commentary. And they named me. I didn't name myself Alec Monopoly. They just named it because I just wrote Alec and then the Monopoly man right there.
Yeah.
And the rest is history. That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's so awesome.
Shout out to Madeline. Thank you. I don't know where you're at, but.
She's in an alley just counting pennies. She goes, fuck you, bro.
Damn. And then. I asked you this once before too. How are there not any trademark
claims
or copyright infringements?
Honestly, because I was very smart from the beginning. So I kind of took the artist business model of Andy Warhol.
Oh, yeah.
Andy Warhol, his first paintings that made him famous and successful were of the Campbell's soup can.
Yep.
So basically, I kind of took that model in the fact that I'm not making merchandise of it.
Mm.
There was a Supreme Court case on numerous artists. I think there was one involving Mickey Mouse and I forget the other artist's name. But so basically, if you don't make t-shirts, merchandise, if it's an original painting, you can use any trademark.
No
basically.
Way. Wow.
So like I could use McDonald's logo and do whatever with it as long as I'm not making t-shirts and whatever. But at the same time, I have a good relationship with them and I don't cross the line. I know it's a children's game. I know I know I have a lot of fans that are young kids. So, I'm very I'm very responsible how I do it. I don't paint Monopoly
smoking crack.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. I have a responsibility. Yes. And I feel like they enjoy it because I bring
I'd buy some.
Oh, if you 100%.
I'd buy some risque Monopoly art.
So he'll never do it.
Have
though.
You ever thought about partnering with them for an actual board game?
I was just going to ask.
See, that's I think where where it's like the gray area because I still do graffiti. I'm not going to say I'm...
Got it.
Usually I have permission, but,
Yeah. Mm.
So, hopefully at some point we'll do it, but...
I feel like if they put their stamp on him,
Then it's like... And at the same time, then every graffiti piece, people are like, is that a paid billboard for the collaboration?
Oh, I see.
You know what I'm saying?
I see. There's a whole... Okay, interesting. So if you make it just a one-on-one piece of art,
One of one. I've never made a t-shirt with Monopoly Man. I've never made a print, a multiple. They're all one of a kind pieces.
Now, do you feel, I never asked you this as a friend, but I'm genuinely curious. Do you feel like you could be pigeonholed potentially? Because you're Alec Monopoly, you know? Mm-hmm. Do you think that, I don't know, eventually you're going to switch a style or evolve into a different form of artistry?
Alec Candyland?
100%. No, for sure. I mean, I have a whole other body of work that I've been preparing and getting ready for the next stage in my career, cool. You know? So it's funny because some of the pieces that I'm creating today, I thought of like 3 years ago that I never really got it done. Yep. So it's like, you're already ahead of it. So yeah, I mean, in the future, I want to work more on oil paintings and like stuff where it's like, I've been working on that piece for like a year, you know?
Yep.
And that piece is $1 million or whatever.
Damn.
So, and I did have one piece that was like that. And that I'd been working on for like 6 months and I've been adding stuff and whatever. And then someone's like, name your price. I'm not even gonna say how much. It was a lot. And then I sold it. But then now I'm like, what the fuck? Like, why did I sell that? I spent so long on it. Like, should I ask more?
How much you sell it for?
I think it was like 200.
What's the most expensive piece you've ever sold?
I think it was 250 for a sculpture.
Sick.
See, I don't want to inflate the price so much. You know, these artists that say, oh, they're at $3 million at auction, then they're fucked because not everyone has $3 million to buy a piece. You know, I just kind of do it with supply and demand. When the art show sells out immediately and there's nothing for sale, obviously you bring up the price.
Yep.
So I kind of do it organically. I'm not trying to, you know, get into a place where I'm not selling any. It's a lot of politics, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a favorite piece that you ever made?
That piece I'm talking about.
Oh, the one that you spent a lot ton of time
on? Yeah,
yeah. You're sad. You want that shit back.
I want it back, bro.
Yo, if you're watching this episode of Impulsive Rich Man that bought that painting, could you please consider just selling it back?
Yeah, please.
Give it back. And you've gotten to meet so many cool people. I was taken aback at how worldly you are. You just know so many people and things and have gotten to go on the craziest experiences as an artist. So interesting, bro.
Why don't you suck his dick, man?
Fuck. No, but dude.
Yeah, dude, what's up with that?
It's just.
That's so weird that you're like.
That was your job.
Yeah, right?
No. He's just.
Yeah. I have.
Present your wiener.
Present
your wiener.
I was thinking about this. When you said you missed the rush of being like, oh, that, well, you know, I'm like, were you in the middle?
Well, I mean, it was kind
off?
Of a.
Does that feel bad when you cut somebody off, Mike?
Well, I just didn't know if he had something. I'm sorry. You're a worldly person. You've traveled a lot. Do you have a favorite location? Do you have a favorite party?
Favorites? Like, what is this, Mike? The back of your school question. Yearbook?
Who's the most popular person in your graduating class? Shut up.
My question is if you miss the.
Wait, I was going to answer him.
You don't have to.
Where are we going with this?
Yeah, answer me. Answer me. Answer
him. Okay, worldly person.
Yeah, no. No, that's what.
Okay, go ahead and answer me. Answer me. Recently, I went to the palace to meet the Prince of Monaco.
See, now we're talking.
And that was dope because I've met the princes of Saudi, this, that. But to go to the Prince of Monaco, to the palace, this is like real royalty. You know, you're coming into the palace. There's like the soldiers out front. And he was actually the coolest guy. Like we were, because I made a painting of Grace Kelly, his mom. You know, she was the famous Hollywood actress that became a princess. And cool. So I did a paint, and it was actually a painting I did live in Monaco while I was DJing.
Cool. Very cool.
In the palace. So it was nice to meet the big boss. So we go to Monaco.
Yeah. Was that on that same trip that we were talking about last night? The one with the boat that got canceled?
No. This was recent.
What did the boat do to get canceled?
Oh.
There's COVID restrictions. Okay?
We'll stick with that. Too many people on the boat.
Say you're going down this road of being a DJ artist, which I find it very cool. But you were saying that you miss the fact of being like new and getting in your car and doing all these things. Have you ever like wanted to make a different name and cover up the identity of it and just do different art around the street and just not label it under you?
Yeah, I've thought of this, but then it's just like so much extra work. It takes so many years to build. Well, actually, It was very quickly for me.
So it was about 22 days.
Yeah. Let me be honest with you. I was playing Monopoly.
My DJ career, my graffiti career blew up pretty quickly.
Dude.
But I've actually thought of it, but at the same time, it's like I have so much energy.
No, I'm just saying to get rid of your risky ideas, to have that thrill back, yeah. to do shit that you can't do with your art that you're doing now.
That's a good idea.
Like thank Prids, you. Dude, to bring it back to the DJ.
Thank you.
Alec, to bring it back to the DJ, like Prids has Prida and like two, what do you has? Like three different like monikers or like surnames.
Diplo has Major Lazer and all that shit.
Well, that's a group.
What's him?
He's in the group. Yeah. It's like NSYNC, but with DJs.
First of all, nothing's like NSYNC. You do that again, that's blasphemous.
You look like you're in NSYNC.
Right? I wish. I look like I'm like Lance that just gained a few pounds. I'm fat.
Here he goes again with fat
shaming. Stop fat shaming yourself.
You guys called me a rhombus. I had to Google that shit.
Your head is just a perfect building block.
Roblox.
You're Roblox.
I'm fasting now, yeah.
You're fasting. Yeah, nice work.
You really, you're terrified of this new you.
I'm not, I don't like it, bro. I don't like it.
Bro, you gained like 3 pounds. Look at Quinn.
I gained 13.
Look at Quinn.
But no, listen, the reason I don't like it is because it just snuck up on me. It all hid here, man. It just, I didn't know.
You got the turkey neck going?
Okay. I do.
What?
Alec, I'm impressed actually with your commitment to fitness. You're always finding a way to go to the gym. Heck, even today.
We worked out. Me and Alec worked out.
Yeah, you guys worked out. Dude, but also, we were up to like 5 a.m. just drinking and listening to Mike DJ. Like, I was cooked today, dude.
Yeah.
And I had to drive to San Juan to get my passport. But your commitment to health is actually is remarkable.
That's why it's nice having you guys because, like, coming to train with you guys when you were getting ready to fight Mayweather, I was there every day with you guys.
Yeah.
And it's fun. I enjoy it.
How is your lifestyle, you'd say, in general? Healthy? Like, you drinking, you partying, smoking, not sleeping a lot?
I would say it's healthy when I'm in Puerto Rico.
Mm.
I don't know about the DJ tour life. It's not...
It's not, so funny,
it's not
dude.
A wholesome atmosphere, I don't think, but...
Dude,
sorry, Mom.
you popped up as much there, too, as you did in the art world as fast, dude. Like... You just started DJing, and I swear to God, I was next to you DJing with Afrojack at PhD the other night. How deep are you into your DJ career? He's a stadium selling DJ. He's one of the biggest global DJs. Like, and you're literally like, yeah, Afrojack asked me to spin next to him at PhD tonight. And it really happened.
I was actually really nervous to DJ with him. And then it was like, it was cool.
You crushed it.
We were just going with the flow. He was like, I got to play some of the hits here and there. And like, you know, I was playing my techno... You know, deep house, 100%. Stuff like that. But
I saw some of his original stuff coming out. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I have some original music.
So you're leaning into it. I know this, that you're taking lessons. Like, you're working with someone to
producers, DJ, all of that.
It's why you're great.
You have to work at it.
I know, but everyone misses that step. And it's cool. It's one of the coolest things about being on this island is seeing everyone really doing their own thing and living in that own... their own environment and you can so easily here see the ingredients for success, and there's like a through line for all of it. Like, the fact that you're going behind the scenes to improve your skill
is that
secret recipe, secret ingredient everyone forgets about.
Well, for me, I'm not afraid to like call someone and ask them for help
or
learn. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, I want to learn watercolor. I mean, I know how to watercolor paint, but I want to get better at it. Yep. I'm the type of guy who's like, okay, to call someone who's a pro at watercolors and say, could you come over and teach me a little bit? You know, I don't have an ego with that.
Yeah, you don't wrestle with pride.
Yeah, I have no ego with that. So I'm always learning on that's. I think that's the most important part about being an artist is growing and developing and learning. Mm-hmm. You know, by the time you're end of your career, look at Picasso. His paintings were amazing. I mean, he was a little lazy in the end, but they were amazing.
So I saw a tweet the other day. Someone was like, dude,
a little lazy. I would have touched up a little bit.
They said, I thought Pablo Picasso was from the 1500s. Didn't that dude die? He died in 1972. Did you know that, Georgie?
1972?
Yes, Pablo Picasso.
Same year I was born. Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Who are you watching? Any artists?
Not really. I mean, focused on my own work that I'm not really.
But still, I know you collect. Like, you watch Banksy at all or pay attention to it?
Yeah, of course. I mean, he's like the godfather of all of this. So he's the one who kind of made street art a real school of art. So it's like now street art is finally accepted. Like, when I first started, galleries were like, oh, you're a street artist? You know, oh, street art? But like, now it's accepted as a school of art. So the school of art is the period of time period. So say Vincent van Gogh was the creator of modern art. And then there was Cubism, Impression, you know, there was pop art, New York School of Art. And then now there's street art.
Yep.
So that's like a whole school of art. And, that, and then I guarantee the next thing is going to be digital art.
NFTs.
Let's talk about it.
Exactly.
I had to.
I didn't mean to go there.
Nah, we're here.
But no, that is the thank God.
Our audience just clicking off the video.
I don't get, my buddy called me and he goes, hey man, I have 500 to play with NFTs. What do you got for me? I know you hang out with the boys. They can give you a little insight. And I go, what? He goes, yeah, I got 500. I go, 500 what? He goes, 500,000. Let's get it. I'm like, you're spending fucking $500,000 on something you'll never touch.
Well, ask,
you'll never touch it.
Is he interested in the Own One project by any chance? We actually have one that we can we can offload to.
I don't know, man. To me, I like your type of art where I could see it, touch it. And if it's in my house, it's only here. You get what I'm saying? I feel like it gives you some, it's something rare. You can't just open up your phone and screenshot.
That's what I was going to ask, Alec. Digital art, your take on it. You're a brushstroke artist, dude.
I'm feet a on the ground. Artist too.
You're in the trenches.
I made an NFT in 2019.
What?
Yeah.
Knowing, like, with the intention of it being sold as a piece of digital art?
Yes. It was for Leonardo DiCaprio's foundation. And this guy comes up to me and he's like, dude, you got this blockchain art, whatever. I'm like, what the fuck are you even talking about, bro? I'm like,
shut up.
This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And he's like, everyone's doing it. Like, I've got this celebrity, this guy, that guy. I'm like, all right, just like give me the iPad and I'll fucking do this thing.
And you did it.
And I did it, yeah. Okay. Pieces around. It's like been bought and sold like 5 times.
Oh my God.
Okay. The Incognito Project, yeah.
Yo, shut up.
That is not an official Alec Monopoly piece, by the way.
That's fucked up, bro. You're being used a lot. Your name and likeness is being used a lot. And I thought you were part of that project. And just yesterday, you were like, what the fuck is this?
Hey,
another reason why I don't like NFTs.
No.
Shut up, that's Peter Schiff.
No, but...
Go buy some gold with your extra money. I saw a hilarious tweet about Peter Schiff. It's from Lolly, the company Lolly. This is
great company.
He lives above me.
He's a great... We love him. He does
live right above you, right?
Kids call him a boomer.
He owns the unit above me.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's like...
Oh, he's awesome. Super smart.
Look. Peter... Lolly tweeted this. Peter Schiff when gold was $1,800. Peter Schiff when gold is $1,800. It's the same 50 years ago and today. Gold's...
It's moved sideways a little bit for the past couple centuries.
They toast him, bro. Look at young Peter Schiff. We love this guy.
That's Peter Stiff.
This is Peter Stiff. And this is Peter Schiff.
Has he been on the podcast?
Yeah, dude, he did great. We had a great episode.
He crushed it.
He made a lot of good points. I actually sold all my crypto because of Peter. I'm just kidding. I would never.
So I was like, what?
Wow. He's like, I'm all in.
No. You're diversifying your portfolio. You're a big land guy. You got a nice plot of land here in PR, right?
Yep.
You got to be smart with your money.
Yeah, I mean, Puerto Rico real estate has gone, I mean, as you can
parabolic.
See.
Lucky you, dude. Your unit is could potentially sell for what do you think right now?
I mean, I got offered like $10 million for it. I paid $2.8 million and I wanted to take it, but there's nowhere to move to.
Yeah.
So say you sell it for $10 million, then you're going to rent the same unit I'm in is at least $50,000 to $60,000 a month.
Yeah.
So it's like there's nowhere to go.
What about the metaverse? Would you go there potentially?
Yeah.
Oh. Like, get me out of here. Get me out of this bullshit.
Do you know anything about the...
I know, and I almost bought a piece of land on it like a while ago. I should have done it.
You're ahead of the curve on a lot of stuff. I'm sorry, I didn't finish that NFT conversation. I got distracted, and I am a bit hungover today. I can't really form thoughts fully. It's bad.
It's okay.
Thank God for that coffee. But do you have a take or a feeling about non-fungible tokens or digital art in general?
For sure, I see it as the future. I mean, whether we like it or not, it's the future. Because I'm already seeing billionaires and collectors of mine building huge LED NFT walls.
No way.
And staircases and features and galleries in their houses. my gallery is in their new Dubai location, is making an NFT section in the gallery where you can literally go there and see your NFT on the wall on a screen, obviously, and buy it. Like in Art Basel this year, where I don't want to jump the gun on saying it, but we're going to do an event where I'm launching a new NFT and we're going to have huge screens and installations with them. But I think the next step is integrating the original art with the NFT art.
How do you see that happening?
So like, say you have a sculpture, one of my sculptures has a screen installed into it that has that NFT art inside the sculpture. So you sell both of them as a package.
Oh, that's cool.
That's how, I mean, that's how I see value and likeness. But it's for sure the next step. Like I said, there was street art, cubism, digital art is the next form.
Yep.
And it's so funny because I'm gonna admit I was a hater of it. Like say 5-10 years ago, these digital artists that I would see making this art on iPads for fucking 3 weeks making one piece, I'm like, what a waste of time. Like you should be drawing, like, cause a lot of my friends, they draw on their iPad, their sketches.
Yep.
I do all my sketches on paper and I keep all the sketches cause they're worth, you know, 10K for a little sketch. But now that I'm seeing the NFTs and the final project, like the final product becoming worth something, now I'm appreciating it more. So
so interesting. It's so interesting to see art, just everything evolve, but art especially.
So quickly. It was overnight. It was like in 2 weeks, these digital artists became superstars.
Nuts.
It's kind of the time frame we're living in now. Everything's happening so quick, so quickly. People, dude.
Oh my God.
People in what? A year became one of the highest grossing living artists on the planet. Are you fucking kidding
me? It feels like a timing thing too, because it's just that whole like space is so rife with like money.
Yeah.
Or sorry, with crypto, with coins, that they're like, I think a lot of them just look at them as like chips that they can't take out of the casino. So they're like, yo, I have 8,000 ETH that I bought in 2017 for $62. I think I'll drop 200 of them on the people. You know what I'm saying? Like, it just doesn't matter. It's like, to shift direction and it, to his point, it's going to be interesting to see what happens as things continue to play out, you know, and as the field kind of like levels out. Cause right now it's, you know, there's a lot of people with a lot of money in that space to just blow on whatever, you know? Yeah.
No, I mean, one of my good friends that I met him maybe 8 months ago in Dubai. His name's Harry Ye. He's this guy from Canada, Asian guy, like genius. He can work like 10 computers at once. And he set me up with my first crypto account and gave me Phantom Coin when it was 13 cents. He gave me like 35K in it. And now it's at like $3 or something like that. And it's almost $1 million.
Sick.
And he's a billionaire now. He's ordered like 4 yachts. He bought 3 Bugattis and brought them to the conference that he brought me to. Like I've seen this guy become a billionaire in front of my eyes. But it's not like this guy's not gambling. This guy graduated Stanford at 16. He's a prodigy. He knows computer.
Yep.
So it goes to say like it's not just gambling. There's a science to it. Like say Beeple. It's not like he blew up over 2 weeks. This guy was probably eating shit for years, making digital art.
Decades
making digital art when people are saying, what are you doing? You should be making canvas paintings. And now he's the king of the world and he's made more than all of us who are making canvas paintings for 50K years ago. So it's not like people think that they can just buy Shiba Inu and it's just like, it's going to blow up. Like there's a science to it. And like, if you work hard at it, these people don't come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Well, Beeple's was what? First 5,000?
5,000 days in a row.
First 5,000 days.
I think more than that. I just know he definitely did 5,000 days in a row.
And what is creating a new piece
of digital art.
How many years is that? Is that 15 years?
5,000 days in a row.
Oh, wait, no. I fucked up big time. I did horrible math. 36. Oh, wait, is it? Or is it like 12, 13
years? It's something. I can't quite deal with numbers.
I feel like maybe I wasn't even that far off.
Is David paying attention?
Because wouldn't 10 years be 36?
5,000 divided by 365. Yeah.
13 years, yeah.
13 years. Wow. Every day for that guy, Beeple. He deserves
He's like the Banksy of...
Yes, he is.
He's the Banksy of digital art.
He definitely...
You know what I'm saying? And he deserves everything he's got, that guy. He's... Oh,
fuck, that's
He
so
just
cool.
sold his the other piece. The first... What's it called?
Human One.
Human One.
$29 million.
Square box?
Yeah, the box.
Yeah.
Wow, and like you can tap into the Wi-Fi on it and
dude, this is insane. Yes, he can update the art. You can change the art and it's still from the hand of people. And he can do it based on current events. Like there's the human in the box. So for those of you listening who don't know what the piece is, it's like a 6 foot, 7 foot tall giant spinning
four
box.
Four sides, right?
Yep, four sides with a human walking through it that Beeple made, and it's walking through
space. He's on the moon right now or something?
Nah, it can be nighttime, right, it can be daytime. Right. And he's
changing it at all times.
Exactly. Yeah. He's like, yo, if there's like forest fires going on in the world and I want to have the guy walking through fire at one point, like I can do that instantly and beam it to the buyer's house. Like,
I just want to know what he's doing with this, like, 29 million, 150. Like, me, I'd have a new yacht, a new private jet. Like,
what is he doing with that money?
What are you doing?
When you come up on that much money that quick, people, what are you doing?
I love watching the scene of him when he finds out, like, when he sees how much he made. Like, it's like him with his.
No, you could see him.
He doesn't care about the money.
No. But you could see him eventually, like, when his that. $70 million piece sold. You could see him. It hits 20 million, and he's like, "Whoa!" And then 50 million. He's like, "What?" And then eventually, he just stops. He gives up trying to comprehend.
Cannot compute. He's like, "Fuck it, I'm good for life."
How much is he worth now?
I mean, he's had a couple massive fucking sales.
I mean, bro, those two pieces alone that we just talked about is $100 million.
And those are the ones we know about. Yeah, imagine the shit we don't know about that's going on.
And he's still making everydays.
He goes to the dinner with you. He's like, you want to split this? You're like, no.
I wish every guy would get money and be like the guy Harry Yeh I was telling you about. Like, literally, he like became a billionaire. He ordered 3 yachts.
Yeah.
He brought 2 Bugattis into the conference. There was like this new Lamborghini Centurio. There was like 2-3 million. He's like, I want it now. And like, it literally just showed up. I'm like, this guy literally just bought this right now. Wow. Like,
now he's now he's in the back alley with Madeline.
And he's like, here's $100,000, pennies. Alec. I'm going to give it to you in different grip. Like, that guy knows how to do it right.
I love his name.
Carrier.
you got to meet him. He's a special guy. He's a very
you
amazing
have some
guy.
Toys
shout
too.
Out to
you
him.
Like to have some fun.
Of course, of course.
That was actually the coolest thing about you that I learned is you're a madman. You got that side too. You go fast on bikes. You shoot guns. You go off roading. You're like us, bro. You fish.
That's when we hit. I think that's when we hit it off immediately. Is when I was like, should we go on the quads and I'll take you to the trail?
Yeah.
And then we're like passing by like burnt cars and dead bodies and like.
It's just burnt cars there.
Yeah, everybody. Burnt cars.
Burnt cars.
Why is it only you can only get a laugh from David?
Because you're a dark, German.
We cut that anyways, right?
Not at all.
All of it stays.
So when you
sorry about that.
We should just come back to him saying that.
He's listen, a lot's changed, right?
That's so funny.
Wait, yeah. So
a lot's changed.
Yeah.
No, but I'm not. Those trails are dangerous back there.
Yeah. The trails are
dangerous. Let's just move on.
The trails are dangerous. Let's move on.
So we're going out tonight. Oh, I wish Harry Yeh was coming with us.
Dude, me too. And he spends in the club.
Really?
His after parties are amazing. Very colorful.
You see any, ever had seen any dark sides to the partying lifestyle?
100%. I was a victim of the dark side of the party.
I was going to ask you up front, but I didn't know what you felt comfortable talking about.
No, I was,
can
you elaborate on that?
I was sober for like 2 years.
Yep.
I overdid it and it caught up with me and.
What happened? Because I think I'm headed there.
I think the problem was, and it's a big problem in America, is these doctors that will over-prescribe prescription drugs. I think this is a big problem. Mm. Like, these guys are just ready to write you anything.
Yep.
And then you get hooked on, say, your back pain is killing you, and you're taking these pills all day long. And then you're dependent on that. And for me, I don't want to be dependent on anyone or anything. Mm. That's when,
Was it a pain medication?
Yeah, it was
opiates.
Percocets. Yeah. So I was taking like 3 a day. And then like at one point I was traveling and I lost them. And like, it was just like, I lost my life. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was like getting sick and I was like freaking out and ended up flying home to get more.
Oh.
And I was like, dude, I just like flew home from the beautiful south of France, Saint-Tropez, to go get more painkillers because they don't have them in Europe. And I was like, this is the end of it. This is fucking it. And then, yeah, I checked into like a rehab facility and it honestly changed my life. I was a different person before then. Like, I had an ego. I wasn't grateful in life. I didn't really.
You were a slave to it.
Exactly. So.
But it taught. But what you're saying is, it taught you everything.
It taught me so many lessons, and it taught me an even greater lesson is just like not to hold grudges with people. Like, I forgive people immediately because like you being mad at someone is just like fucking with your head.
Mm. Yeah, it's worse for you than
it's worse for you because all day long you're like, fuck that guy, and like he doesn't know you're thinking that.
Yeah.
Unforgiveness keeps them in control. That's a big quote.
New stat today, as of today, like just before I read it, just before we came onto the podcast, 100,000 Americans died of drug overdoses this year, more than car accidents and gun violence combined. Just mind blowing. I know it's a dark stat, it's not enough people are talking about it. It's not getting the attention it deserves, and you know it's all COVID and this and that, and it you know every year it goes up by 20,000-30,000 Americans, and they're just forgotten and no one talks about it. It's just a sick, fucked up pharma money driven situation.
Yeah, exactly. Because in Europe there's no issues with this. You can't go get Percocets from, they're just like, dude, take a Tylenol.
Yeah.
Take an extra strength Tylenol. You're fine. Like, why do you need to get so high from a, like,
unless your limb is severed. No, like, I've gotten Demerol because my leg was off my body.
Yeah, you know, but like, you had like, a little backache.
Yeah, like, no, dude. Like, go take a Tylenol 800, you pussy.
I'm so glad you guys say that because growing up, I thought my mom was like losing her fucking mind. I had one wisdom tooth, only one. Don't say any jokes. I know where you guys are going with this. I only had one.
Where
and,
are we going, George?
And they only have one wisdom tooth.
I was not going to make a single joke about you being a dumbass. But now I did. Because you brought it up. It's the same reason I call you fatty, bro. I wouldn't have said
thing. No. You call me a rhombus, bro.
No. He called you a rhombus. I said your head looks like the foundation of a building.
Cornerstone.
It does. You can't even get mad at them.
No,
they're making valid points. But when I got my wisdom tooth taken out, they give you painkillers.
Yeah.
My mom wouldn't let me take it. Good. She like cut it into like 10% and then gave it to
and
me.
And took it all herself. She cut it into 10. No, into
she
10.
She went, it was weird. She's like, how's your tooth, honey?
No,
no, but I was never allowed to take Advil growing up. I was never allowed to take
Advil. All right. Well,
no,
now,
I'm not kidding. They didn't want me to get used to this because a lot of kids,
that's a little fucking.
Can you imagine being addicted to Advil?
It's like, yo, you got any more of that ibuprofen, dog?
No, they didn't. They didn't want me to rely on things. They saw how the school was just sending me to the nurse and all these kids were just getting Advils or like, just ibuprofens and shit like that at school. And she didn't like the fact.
Who's gonna tell her that?
That's like a. That's like. It's like getting a milk carton.
So like, what do you counter? Just go walking.
I guess they didn't want it to grow to anything.
I don't get how Advil could grow into anything. Yeah, it's not a seed.
It's been a long trip for me, dude. Started off with Motrin.
Look where it ended, Mike.
Can you?
You had one headache and then you ended up in the alley.
Oh, the fucking hospital gave me Oxy-40, bro. OCs.
Can you imagine all major addiction stems from over-the-counter Advil?
You don't know.
What did you do?
What if he's like, man, this headache went away. I wonder if I could get rid of this. More pills, Pop. See?
I actually won't take pills, the pain medications after surgery.
No,
because I just know I have an addictive personality
smart.
Too.
I just said that.
No, we're not talking about ibuprofen, George. But my grandmother takes that. She's 12 pounds.
When I was a kid, she didn't want me to rely on it. Because when I'm an adult now, I don't do that. I don't, like, for today, I'm not even going
to go there. Dog, there's levels to it. Like, when I got hit by a Toyota at full speed on a bicycle and shattered my skull, I needed something. Like there's a level of pain that becomes torture if you don't take a painkiller. And by the way, when that happened, I didn't take a painkiller because it was post getting clean.
Oh.
And so I actually still, even with blood squirting out of the back of my fucking head, I told them, I can't take it.
Are you monitoring your behavior at all these days?
Yeah. I mean, I had a root canal recently and it was amazing. They prescribed me.
Are you relapsing?
Like watching it go this way,
are you relapsing right now? What are you talking about?
Wait.
Why are you giggling like that?
No, I mean,
what are you talking about?
He's like, guys, we got a problem.
Yeah. No, I mean, I do. I think addiction is a disease and it runs in your family. And for sure, I got it from my dad because my dad drinks a lot and his dad had a problem. So I think it's a hereditary thing for sure.
No, it absolutely
addictive
is.
Personalities. But I realized this, people that it could go both ways, because a lot of successful people will say, yo, my father was like this, or my mom was like this, I didn't want to be like that. Or my brother was like for this, sure. Or I was like this and I got out of it. For example, Mike. I think it has to do with just focusing. I think our minds are made to focus on one thing and just go 100 in. So when you're like into drugs, you're like, oh shit, I'm 100% into this. So I think this is dangerous. If you're going to be successful and be focused, it could be double-edged sword.
You know, off that point, it is a really, really strong point. Do you feel like you, as you moved out of that addiction, you found yourself just addicted to your work?
For sure. I mean, I've always been addicted to my work. That's why I've been so successful, because I was graffitiing on every single street corner, street light, even on the ground and stuff like that. So I think that's what's attributed to my success. Like, if I wasn't an addictive person, I didn't have all these problems and all this fucked up stuff going on in my head, I wouldn't be where I'm at. I would just be a regular guy.
A lot of artists are like that. You know that. We had this a couple episodes ago.
That trauma man is you know, that trauma,
the trauma man.
There he is.
He's like the boogeyman for trauma.
But I mean, there's nothing that I would want to hear more if I was a audience member that was like going through some shit right now, watching Impulsive. That is what built me. It's what built you. It's what is building it. Like,
if you can make it, if you can make it out of that hole, what a growth process. Like, honestly, if you can make it out.
Gives you everything.
Well, it takes a lot of work and dedication to get you out of that hole. So when you're out and you're like, okay, I'm with everybody, you're like, I still have this hustle mentality. You have to focus that energy somewhere, and this is where you do.
But it's also too, it's just everything that you learn about life being in that place, it just changes you. When you have nothing, your back's against the wall, and it teaches you empathy for other people that are in that position. It teaches you everything. And it's not just addiction. It's not just this or that. It could be any kind of struggle or trauma in life. And the struggles are your best teachers. There's no teacher like going through some shit that you don't know if you could beat. It's the best professor in the fucking world.
You should clip that and post it on your Instagram.
That one clip from Impulsive is fucking gets posted a million times a day.
The way he closed his eyes and said that, though. So I want you to clip.
Why
that.
Is that girl gold?
Can we get a pan or no?
No.
Fuck. It was. I asked.
Why did I point it out? If we
you
weren't
know
gonna
what,
pan?
She's never gonna depreciate. You guys should invest.
We got to show the
girl. Peter Schiff is going to come over here and just rip
this
her
This is
out.
What I'm talking about, baby.
Peter don't talk like that.
We got to show
is
the
he
girl.
A fucking 1960s gang, Chicago gang member? This is what I'm talking about, baby.
I love Peter, dude. I love Peter Schiff. He's a guy.
I didn't know you guys got so close.
We didn't. He just came on the pod.
Okay.
But then we had, you know, you sit down with someone for an hour and a half. You listen to him talk and.
Two hours. He had really good points.
Second longest podcast, damn near.
I mean, he's not where he's at for nothing. I mean, he's a very successful guy.
Exactly. All right, so what's up?
What's up?
We going out tonight?
Yeah, I don't know.
we going out tonight?
I have a girlfriend, bro, so.
Yeah, fair enough. You ever pretend your dog's ears are the things that you use to save someone's life? Clear.
Defibrillators. Yeah.
I'm happy you didn't
I was thinking Flint. He's like, stop pretending my ears are Flint, dude.
That's exactly what he said.
Hey, man. These aren't defibrillators, they're ears. All right, we're done, probably.
Yo, that was good. That's fine.
Alec, thank you, bro.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah, thanks for coming on Impulsive. I mean, it's the number one podcast in the world. I can't make this shit up. If they want to follow you on Instagram, where can they do that?
Alec Monopoly.
He's great. If you guys see him in person and he comes to your city to do a show, make sure to be there. I make it a point to go to every one of your shows front row with a sign that says I heart Alec. Guys,
you actually start
button.
DJing too.
Sometimes.
Remember you were like, which button? I'm like, okay, that
I turned a knob. I turned one knob. I'm very grateful for your friendship. We're done with the podcast. Bye.
Nice. Very grateful for your friendship. We're done with the podcast.
I love
bye.
That ending.
Well, this is the ending too.
Oh. You got smoked.
traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.